Where's Don Cornett from Exxon in Anchorage is now speaking. We'll give the mic over to him.
We'll have to cut it off sometime before 6 to catch the plane over there. I've tried to get answers to the questions that you asked this morning. Let me run back through for the people who were not here this morning, and I have sort of an updated statement. It'll sound a little familiar to some of you. And the ones that were here for Commissioner Kelso's press conference this afternoon, it will sound even more familiar to you. Two committees were established yesterday to oversee the cleanup operation. A steering committee of three includes Exxon, the Coast Guard, and the state of Alaska. The operating committee consists of representatives of Exxon, the Coast Guard, state agencies, and the fishing industry, including the Alaska Chugach Corporation. These committees will work to define priority cleanup areas, develop plans for conducting cleanup of specific areas, and remain flexible to respond to changing conditions. Dr. Ronald Goodman, a remote sensing expert, has arrived today and is involved in a flyover today to assist in tracking the oil. Uncooperative weather Monday with wind gusts up to 70 miles per hour delayed all cleanup operations by over 30 hours. Full cleanup operations began at daybreak. In response to high wind warnings Sunday night, Exxon moved quickly to secure all skimming operations and get the crews to a safe location. All the skimming equipment is intact. However, the containment boom around the vessel was damaged and is essentially back in place. It is back in place at this point. Booms are being moved to Main Bay. Oh boy, correct me. Ashami Bay and Evans Island, where sensitive fisheries as identified by the operating committee are located. The total number of skimmers currently in use is 12. Six additional skimmers are in various states of readiness. 3,500 barrels of oil have been recovered through skimming, and that was this morning's number. We were able to drop one dispersant load of 5,500 gallons in Zone 1 yesterday afternoon with EPA permission. Dispersants are being sprayed in Prince William Sound proper today around the ship in Zone 1, as it was identified by Commissioner Kelso. Burning is being planned at Eleanor Island today also. Exxon has about 200 people available, 120 from VECO and at least 50 from NORCON, to conduct the cleanup effort. The crews were unable to operate Monday due to weather conditions, but were fully active today. We intend to hire more than 100 additional local workers by Wednesday afternoon. As of 3 p.m. Tuesday, we had successfully transferred more than 260,000 barrels from the Exxon Valdez to the Exxon Baton Rouge using 6 submerged pumps, with 4 additional pumps being deployed. This represents 26% of the volume on board, with little significant leakage currently occurring. When all pumps are in place, the transfer capacity will be about 12,000 barrels an hour, with the current rate at 7,700 barrels an hour. A sister ship with a capacity of 450,000 to 500,000 barrels, the Exxon San Francisco, is standing by at Knoll's Head. Another sister ship, the Exxon Philadelphia, is in the area on the way from Portland. I have worked on this too fast, I can see. There was a question about the birds this morning. We were able to contact Dr. Alice Berkner, and we got this statement. As of Tuesday afternoon, no oiled birds have been treated at a cleanup center established in Valdez. Dr. Alice Berkner of the International Bird Rescue Center is heading this effort. She has stated that 20 oiled birds may have been sighted on Saturday. In a second summary today, however, Dr. Berkner stated that 2 birds may have been sighted. None of these birds were captured. A similar program for identifying and cleaning sea mammals has been established by Dr. Randall Davis of the Hubs Marine Research Center. The first mammal survey was conducted today by Dr. Davis. I don't have the results of that. Both Dr. Davis and Dr. Berkner are expected to meet this evening with Pam Bergman, the DOI representative responsible for administering these programs to further develop cleanup strategies. And also, in an independent survey Saturday, a U.S. Fish and Wildlife representative stated 90 oiled birds were sighted. That is not, that's what we know about it at this point. That's not totally consistent with what I told you this morning, but it was the best information I had at the time. One other piece of information that we wanted to give you is that we have a claims office operational in Valdez and we'll be opening one in Cordova as soon as possible. Claims should be submitted to one of these offices. The Valdez telephone number is 835-5406. And the gentleman in charge of claims handling is here if you have questions about that. That's the end of my statement.
Is there any more questions in the facility right now?
At the terminal?
At the terminal facility. Protecting the full tanker that's there and the one that's loading.
That was the person I was waiting on, was someone from the Alyeska Pipeline Terminal. I don't know the answer to the question, but if he shows up, I'll have him come up and answer that. Yes, sir.
Exactly what is it the fishermen are going to be doing? How many boats and what tasks they're carrying out exactly?
I was at the press conference today when the DEC described what they were doing, this mosquito fleet that they're putting together. And they're the people who really know where the sensitive areas are in the sound, and they are pointing those out, and then they're also stringing boom and doing what they can to protect those sensitive areas.
And are they putting their boats in with a much bigger group of, you know, Exxon and other people, or are they themselves going to string the booms, or?
They're working, I guess, under the direction of the DEC, if I understood their announcement properly here today, and they're doing what they and the DEC think is the best thing to do to protect those sensitive areas in the sound.
Exxon won't be taking part in those boom-laying activities in those sounds, right?
Yes, we will. We will be responsible for all that. We will be compensating those people for the work that they're doing, paying for the rental of the booms and everything else. It'll all be part of the overall coordinated effort, but the state, the Coast Guard, and Exxon are working together and divvying up the work and putting the people in the places where they can do the best.
So I suggested that on Sunday, get full permission to go ahead with dropping the chemicals until 6:45, and that there was permission was not forthcoming from the DEC as a result, and that was the result. But according to them, no permission was needed if these chemicals were dropped in Zone 1. And if they were dropped in anywhere else, they had already given permission. It was well before 6:45. So, you know, the old thing, you can't both be right.
What's your question?
Well, do you think you're right?
Of course.
Do you have further, you know, evidence to back up your disagreement with them?
I think we're at the place on this, sort of where we were on some other topics. This is a time to look forward. I was very pleased to see Exxon and the Coast Guard, the City of Valdez, the DEC, all going forward working together today. That's the approach we want to take to it. There will be a time to look back, and there will be blame enough to go around. And I'm sure that Commissioner Kelso doesn't like being kicked around any more than Exxon likes being kicked around.
You suggested I looked at that problem this morning.
Yes.
I met you.
And you got two answers. Which one you like?
After this exchange, I'll be making up my mind.
I could spend the whole evening and build a case, but it is not constructive and it's not productive to do that. And the time will come when we can go back. You have your videotape. You know she said what when. I have my story. I heard Commissioner Kelso's story. Let's let it rest and get on with the oil spoons.
Is it correct now that after 5 days of the Exxon cleanup, you've gathered a total of 3,500 barrels from the 240,000 barrels which leaked? Is that still the correct figure that was given out this morning?
That was what it was this morning. I don't know what it is.
Has any oil been removed today?
Yes, we've been working all day today. This is the best day we've had.
So what's the figure now?
I don't know. I won't know that until we get the reports in the morning. I'll give it to you in the press conference in the morning.
What were the results of your burning this afternoon?
Well, I don't know that either. These people are out there working. They come in tonight. We'll have a large joint meeting tonight. Everybody will report what happened. We'll summarize it, and I'll give it to you in the morning. I don't know.
What's the extent of what happened on the coastline? I'm still not clear on that today. The extent
of
the work.
It's still happening, and it's growing. As I said here at noon today, it is growing as we speak, and we don't know.
Well, what do you expect is happening? I won't hold you to this.
I expect that the oil is continuing to contaminate the shoreline around Knights Island and in that area.
But in terms of the response to that on the coastline?
We have people out there working on that right now, and I don't know what they're doing. I can tell you that in the morning.
About how many?
200.
And those 200 are on the coastline?
No, we have 200 all total.
Yeah, but how many are on the coastline is what I'm wondering.
I don't know.
Do you have any idea?
No, I don't know
anymore. Mr. Cornett, people who went in the air today did not see too many skimmers. Was there some problem with the wind, or you said you had 12 skimming boats out there today. Do you think they were all being used, or were they ice?
Skimmers, some skimmers are boats. Some skimmers are just large, I don't know how you describe them, skimmers. They're dropping down in the water. Look like an inverted or a tub or something if you look at it from the air. I doubt very seriously if you would see them from the air.
When this is all over with, and a certain amount of oil is going to fall down into the Gulf of Alaska, can you give me your best guess right now? How much you think is going to just get totally away, go out into the Gulf?
That would be a really wild guess, because first you have to make an estimate of how much evaporated. I mean, we know that a lot of it evaporates.
Well, is there a rule of thumb you can go by?
Well, there is, if you have time to go back and look at the temperature of the water and the gravity of the crude and the ambient temperature and all those things. I have not had time to do that, but a rule of thumb is more evaporates than dissolves, but 25 or 30% all told will go away that way on normal oil spills, and boy, that is really rough guessing. Then, the bacteria begins to biodegrade it right away, so some of that goes away that way. Then the rest of it's painted on the shoreline, and what's not goes out to sea, and I haven't any idea how to estimate what goes out to sea, if any.
Is it your intention to clean up all the oil that lands on beaches in Prince William Sound?
It is.
On the salvage operation, earlier Mr. Iarossi had said he thought when there was 300,000 barrels removed that the ship might be buoyant again. Do you have a time frame on that now? Does it seem like you're approaching that?
That's been a little bit of a moving target too, because we've discovered the naval architects and the salvage people have discovered that the ship has more buoyancy on the starboard side than we thought it had to start with. And he said today that they'd have about 500,000 barrels off tomorrow on the Baton Rouge, and they'd bring the San Francisco in, take the rest of the oil off, and then that would happen by Saturday night, and then they would commence trying to refloat the ship, and they're going to seal the openings on the deck and create a seal that will hold pressure and get as much buoyancy into it as they can, and then get the ship up off the pinnacle so that they can see what kind of damage they have to the bottom there, and then decide what they need to do to get it seaworthy so they can take it to a shipyard.
Maybe sometime next week we'll move to actually refloat the vessel?
I would rather have Mr. Iarossi speculate about that, because he's a mariner and I'm not.
Have there been any projections yet of what this operation is going to cost Exxon, aside from the claims that you presume will come after?
No, it's too early to estimate. It will be a very expensive spill, I know that. Yes, ma'am.
I talked to some fishermen from Cordova on the docks today who had offered their boats on Friday to help, and just today they're being dispatched. They're not even sure of their job, and their clear concern is that the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing in this operation. What is going on?
Well, I learned most of what I know about the Cordova fishermen and their fleet today listening to, I believe it was Mr. Lamb from the I'm not sure. Is that the man's name from the fisheries?
The startup on this massive cleanup operation is clearly slow, and it seems the impression one has left that it's quite disorganized, and you had three good days and you didn't make anything of it.
Well, I have been on several of these. It always appears disorganized the first couple of days. I mean, it is crisis, and I assure you that we put all of our energy into trying to make it as orderly as we can, but as fast as we can. The fishermen, we did employ some fishermen, two or three boats on Friday or Saturday, had them working for us, and they gave a number of 15 today, and the gentleman from Fish and Wildlife seemed to think it was very well organized, that these fishermen knew what they were doing and were proceeding to do that.
You've got volunteers knocking on your door to get involved in the cleanup, and they throw up their hands and they go, they don't know what they're doing, they won't take our work. I mean, you've got to help me understand what's going on at the top.
Okay. What we did, we historically, we have tried to do the job without volunteers. Now, if you want to do work on the job, there's a way to get in and work and be paid. But we don't take people who just walk up and say, I want to work on the spill, and send them out, and then have one of them get hurt, and you don't have workman's compensation for them or anything. We have established two contractors, one union, one non-union, and we have invited everybody to come to the job service office and apply to work on this spill, and then they'll go through this organization and have workman's compensation and full coverage, and then they can go work on it. I mean, they're volunteers to that extent, but we don't just take college students or, you know, empty out a bar unless I'll go work on the spill. But that caused a lot of problem in early spill. So we try to do it. It's much more orderly than it appears on the surface, I think.
Why is it that I'm so ill-equipped to deal with a spill like this?
Well, I think I would disagree with you on whether we were ill-equipped to deal with it. I think we are dealing with it.
Come on.
Have you disagreed that we're dealing with the spill?
Well, I've talked to a lot of people in the town who certainly feel that Exxon was not there and that the contingency plan was weak and that the lead time, the response time was hours after what the contingency plan called for. You just weren't ready for it.
What does the contingency plan call for?
5-hour response. It's 14 hours later.
That's from the Prince William Sound Cooperative. And on a spill of this magnitude, then the person responsible for the spill is required to react to the spill with as much effort as it takes to handle it. That's my understanding, and I wish the person from the pipeline was here, or from the terminal was here, is my understanding. They had three tugs. The first tug got to the ship. When they got the call, it got to the ship in 2 hours. The second tug went out with salvage equipment, thinking they could help pull this ship off, not knowing how badly stuck she was. And then there was about a 5-hour delay or something like that in getting the equipment back on the barge that they had taken off, the response equipment, and they were late with that barge. There's a serious question as to what they could have done with the oil that was in the water, that had been in the water for 5 hours with that equipment. So what we had was a requirement to respond according to the oil spill contingency plan for a catastrophe. And a catastrophe, a catastrophic spill, the primary response was spraying dispersants before it hit shore.
Let me ask you this. Why do you think Exxon is doing a good job of handling this spill?
Because I'm seeing it from the inside out, and I know the kind of effort that's going into it and the kind of attention it's getting from the top of the company down. And it may not be exactly the way you want it, but I don't know how I would improve it, knowing the resources that are being utilized. And some things happen. You know, we tried to bring something down from the north slope, and the road was blocked with snow. Those little things are going to happen. But this has been a massive airlift of people and equipment, and this job will be done as well as it can be done.
Mr. Cornett, you heard the Mayor Valdez this afternoon, I take it, when he said, for years we've been offering you to stockpile booms and things which they could have here so you wouldn't have to go search for this stuff when such a catastrophe happened. And he said, in fact, they were assured that this was not needed. It was the City of Valdez did not have to do this because the oil companies had this material ready. Now it's clear you said you did not have it all here.
Well, you need to make a clear distinction between the oil companies and the Prince William Sound Oil Spill Cooperative, which is operated by the Alaska Pipeline Service Company. And I heard him say that, and I'm curious about the answer to that myself. And I am not in a position to speak for Alaska, and that's why I think it's...
Is Exxon not part of Alaska?
We are. We're 20% owned, but we don't speak for them. They have management, and they're here, and they're supposed to be at this press conference, and they promised me if they're not here tonight, they'll be here tomorrow. And I think they're all good questions, and I think you'd be surprised how many answers they have to those things. But their headquarters is in Anchorage, and they do have to come down here.
When and where can we expect the workers who are out today to come back to Valdez tonight?
How do they all come in tonight?
Some are out overnight.
Are all the ones that are coming back already back?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so roughly when and where should we expect them coming back?
I imagine they'll come in on the dock somewhere.
Do you have any idea, or is there somebody I could get in touch with Exxon, who has some idea when and where they'll be coming back?
Do you know where they come back?
They go out on boats, right? Deployed a number of boats for a number of different purposes, including skimming, as well as weir placement. Some of these boats will be on site overnight. Some of them will be returning. It's, you have to address each individual task.
Well, I appreciate that. I'd just like to take up the invitation you extended earlier today to try to talk to some of them if they're willing. And I assume there must be somebody in Exxon who I could talk to who could give me a sense of where at least some will be coming back at some time. Who would I talk to about that?
I would say the long dock bar down by the boat dock.
That sounds fairly facetious.
I wasn't being facetious either. That's the best help I can give
you. And in the whole corporation, the people who are setting up this whole cleanup, the best answer I can get is roundabout dark down by the dock?
That's a real good answer.
Really?
For that, yes.
Okay.
The city dock?
Yes, small boat dock.
How dark?
Well, this is degenerating here. Does anybody have a question about the oil spill?
How many tankers you got waiting to come in? Any idea about that?
All told, the whole industry out there. Last number I heard was 15 or 18.
Why should any of them be allowed to come?
We want to see the oil spill cleaned up before they're allowed to come in.
Was it three that loaded today, Mr. Cornett?
I heard there were two that loaded during the spill. They loaded to me. They were in there when the spill happened. And they allowed the Arcos Sag River in today. And I heard there was another one coming. I haven't even looked over there to see if there was another one there.
Would you mind answering the question of why you think that they should be allowed to come in? The ships? The tankers. Is there a reason?
Kind of a long philosophical deal. I'll dig off into it if you want to.
Well, if you could try to summarize, that would be nice.
All right. The pipeline provides one out of every four barrels of crude oil that's produced in this country. And that's the stuff that makes the diesel engine in your boat run, and it makes the gasoline engine and all those people down in California's Mercedes run. And they have a nasty habit of wanting to fill those things up about every 3 or 4 days.
So what you're saying is Prince William Sound is expendable?
No, I'm saying the Trans-Alaska Pipeline and the operation of it is very important to the state of Alaska and to providing energy to the United States. And that's what
Prince William Sound
is. Beg your pardon?
That's important to Prince William Sound.
Well, I don't believe that we're balancing Prince William Sound versus loading the tankers today. Because we've been doing that for 10 years, and this is the first mishap we've had. Well, we'll see. I don't agree with you. I don't think that one spill is going to ruin Prince William Sound.
The gas pipeline, they're going to have a spill. Petrochemicals, they're going to have spills. You can't just isolate one spill out of just, you have to look at the cumulative effect.
Just.
Yes, could you describe the status of containment around the Exxon Valdez as of today? About 3 hours ago, I took the ship, and there appears to be very large amounts of oil still escaping from the Exxon Valdez headed south into the sound. It appeared like the containment effort was not working there. I just wondered what the problem might be.
The information that I had was that the spillage had, the leakage had declined to a very small amount, that they had gotten the containment boom was broken by the winds, they had gotten it back around there, and there was leakage and there was leakage from the booms, and in zone one where they did have permission to spray dispersants, they were spraying around the ship to get rid of that oil that was coming out of there today. But where we have oil in the booms, we're supposed to be skimming it out of there before it gets out of the booms, and that should be the effort that's going on around there. I have not seen it today myself.
What's your impression of the purpose of the visit by the cabinet officials today from Washington?
I think the president's very concerned about this, just like everyone else is, and he asked those people to come take a look at it, and he's seeing the reports that you people are presenting to him on the television screen, and this is his reaction to it. Go look at it and give me a report. I understand they're going to do
when they may be available or what their schedule is.
It's my understanding that they are arriving about now or arrived a little earlier and were met or being met by the commandant, and we're going to take
question about whether, you know, today they announced that this group would meet with the steering committee, Mr. Iarossi, Kelso, and Coast Guard. It's not certain now whether they will have that meeting tonight or whether they will fly back to Oldendorf Air Force Base and spend the night and come down and have that meeting in the morning and meet with the president tomorrow. And that's the very latest information I have.
Is night traffic going to be allowed for the tankers? Do you know yet?
I'm sorry?
Is night traffic going to be allowed for the tankers? Do you know that yet?
When they first considered opening the port, the announcement was that they would bring them in. They put a 1,000-yard safety zone around the Exxon Valdez, and they were going to escort the tankers in by tug in daylight hours. The announcement that I saw today said the port has been reopened, and it didn't go into details, so I'm not sure that I have answered that question for you. I will know in the morning when I come back home.
In the contingency plan for how to deal with this event, when does the responsibility get traded off from Alyeska to Exxon, and how did that happen?
It was traded off just as our people arrived in town. Alyeska, I got called at 3 o'clock in the morning, as did Mr. Iarossi.
Friday morning.
Yeah, after 12:30, the tug went out to the ship. Got there about 2:30, I guess. We got called. He got called about 3:00. I got called about 3:30, and we started assembling a team of people, pre-selected people who have been on these things before. And as fast as they could get packed, get to the airport, get to Anchorage, and you know, it's hard to get to Valdez from Anchorage late at night. Spend the night near the hotel, near the airport. And we flew them down here the next day. The people who came in the company jet landed here, so they got in the afternoon on Friday, Mr. Iarossi. So he took command of it, but he couldn't replace the supervisors and the workers that were Alyeska to provide.
A phone call, just, okay, we're in charge now, that kind of thing. Just that transfer of responsibility.
It's when Mr. Iarossi gets the word that it's his ship and it's Exxon's oil, then it's our spill. And we took that over before daylight. As soon as he was told that, he said we'd take responsibility for it. And
now you said that Exxon took responsibility when your people arrived in Valdez.
Well, there are two different kinds of responsibility.
Okay.
We take responsibility for the entire thing. We don't send our lawyer up and say this isn't our fault.
I mean the mechanical dealing with the spill cleanup.
Okay, that's what I was answering at first, and then I thought you were asking the other question.
No, I'm talking about dealing with the spill.
Okay. It started the day they got here. As soon as we could get people here who could replace the people from Alyeska, whatever they were doing, we put a man in there doing that, and then their man went back to running the terminal.
I guess I'm asking him a detailed question. Just how does that happen? I mean, was it a phone call? Were there ships out there? I mean,
it is an understanding between the company and the pipeline terminal company that when we say we're going to take it over, we're going to send the resources in here, the people and the equipment. And as we get enough people in here to do the job, you can go back to what you were doing.
Which is what happened.
Exactly. Yes.
Is it Exxon's general practice to assess the adequacy of the cleanup facilities at every port that it goes into and out of on a routine basis?
It is.
So did you make that assessment? Have you made that assessment at this facility?
We make that assessment routinely at every facility we go into, and we were very confident that the response capability of the pipeline company, the terminal, fit the contingency plan. And we had the other parts of the contingency plan stored in places in strategic locations where we could bring it in rapidly.
So, for example, it was your assessment that there were enough feet of booms in Valdez stored on a regular basis?
To contain the size of spill that the contingency plan says that boom would contain.
What size is that?
It's small, but I don't, it's not anything like what we have here. I don't know. I'm going to get the contingency plan and bring a man from the LS Pipeline Service Company. And I have a lot of questions about this, and they're good questions. And
I'm trying to answer them, but I don't have the detailed answers, and you deserve the detailed answers.
So is your assessment limited? Is the standard that your assessment is made just what's in the contingency plan and not what you might think is adequate?
No, we have people in our organization who are ex-mariners or mariners on shore duty, port captains who go to every port, and they assess the conditions of the loading arms, the conditions of the hoses, because those breaks of hoses cause a lot of spills, the lines that are used to tie the ship up, everything about the port, whether it's dredged properly or not, and especially whether they're equipped to handle an oil spill if we have one.
So then basically agree with the position that Alyeska County took in telling the fishermen here not for the city of Valparaiso not to store additional booms.
I would rather have Alyeska respond to that. I don't know anything about that, but all I'm answering is your question about do we inspect the facilities that we send our ships to, and we do.
But when we set up an organization like Alyeska Pipeline Service Company and fund it, and put good managers in there, then we depend on them to carry out the jobs that they're given to do. And we have an owner's committee that oversees that. I'm not part of that. I don't have any connection with it whatsoever. But I'll get your answers.
Sir, why aren't you prepared for a worst case scenario like the one that occurred here with the Exxon Valdez?
Well, that's a good question.
You're darn
but
right.
This spill could have occurred in a million different places.
But why aren't you ready for it?
Well, it is physically impossible to store all the things that you need to handle a spill of this magnitude in a million different places. You have to be realistic about it. You have to store all this equipment that you need at places that you can put it on a Hercules aircraft and get it to any of these million places that you might run aground.
So this can happen all over again?
It's possible to happen again, and it's possible to happen a lot of other places. The probability of it is low, and the proof of the low probability is the fact that we have had this one spill while we drained half of Prudhoe Bay, the largest spill in the country.
So is all this equipment stored somewhere, and it's just a matter of getting it to where the accident
occurs? That's exactly right. It's all bought and paid for, or on contract, or on call. And it's a matter of this team coming together and picking up the book, making the phone calls, and saying, put it on the airplane. And then you have, you know, you can't ever foresee everything. A ship comes in, a plane comes in from London, loaded with oil spill equipment, and you spend 6 hours getting it through customs and anchorage.
Now, this isn't a setup, because I may have misunderstood this, but I was at the airport today and I was standing in Queens
for a payphone. The guy on the payphone was saying that he has carte blanche to pay whatever he wants to get equipment in, and he was saying, load up the plane, and I think he was calling somebody in Texas, load up the plane with equipment we can't get here, buy whatever you need, pumps, booms, that sort of thing. I mean, to me, it sounded like he was buying equipment on Tuesday that hadn't been bought before.
Well, there are some things that you can buy off the shelf, like absorbent pads, picks and shovels and hose. You don't need to buy those and store, you know, enough to clean up what we're going to clean up here. You can get those at Sears Roebuck.
Yeah, but I thought you were talking about the pump mechanisms
and that sort of thing. Is that not the case?
Well, unless they were standard pumps. The skimmers, oil spill boom, the kinds of things that are specific to these kinds of events you have to have on hand, or you have to know that there's a supplier out there that has them in his warehouse, that all you have to do is call him and he puts them on a plane and sends them. But if he doesn't, we build them or buy them or somewhere and we store them in Paris or Houston or Montreal or somewhere.
Sir?
Yes.
I've asked this question before, but I haven't really gotten a firm answer. Considering the situation and how long we had to wait for any action to be taken, do you think in the future it would be advisable that there is someone at the Alyeska terminal who has the authority to act on behalf of any of the parent companies so that we don't have to wait for Mr. Irasi to come from Texas or these other people who came from the lower 48?
They have that authority. They can do anything they think is right.
Well, when we were calling asking to be able to take the vessels out and protect certain sensitive areas, we were told we had to wait until Exxon arrived before any boats could be deployed.
But what kind of boat did you have? Your fishing boat?
Well, yeah, all sorts of fishing vessels, but basically, from what I've heard, that's been the excuses that no one was here to run the operation. So maybe there should be somebody here who has the authority of the parent companies to run the operation.
Well, what were you going to do? To string a boom?
Whatever they needed us to do, but they, when I spoke with the gentleman who was in charge of dispatch, he said he had been on the phone with the Exxon in Texas, whoever, and we had to wait until they got here.
What time did you call?
Friday morning, about 8 or 9 o'clock, probably.
The only thing I can think of is that if you what you would have needed to do is go string boom at that point. That's about all you could do.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, all the boom they had was out there. So you know, if you call them a volunteer to put out
but
boom
not,
that you
not
have,
just
I can't imagine
the volunteer situation. I'm just thinking of the whole situation. We seem to be hearing that. You know, the reason nothing was done for so certain odd number of hours was because that was all Alyeska could do until you arrived.
Well, again, save that question until Alyeska comes up to talk to you. That's a good question.
Does Exxon have a ship in the Conga line ready to come in now? Does Exxon have a ship waiting to come in to load oil now?
No, we're getting all our oil off the Valdez today.
You're not bringing any other ships of yours in the foreseeable future?
Not to my knowledge. Well, in the foreseeable future, sure.
Just wondering right now if you're satisfied with the ability of the oil cleanup facilities of the terminal right at this minute to handle an oil spill that happens right here, just as the Thompson Pass did not too long ago.
I think we have more than enough boom in Valdez today to handle anything that happens over at the terminal. We're probably the best equipped we will ever be on any one given day. The plane loads of boom are still arriving. So yes, I think we could handle it. Plus there's also, if I remember, at the Alyeska terminal, there is a boom in the water that is not part of the response capability. That I know there's a boom across the back of the docks, and I think there's a boom in the water that you just pull around the ship that does, you don't take it away from the terminal.
There were two booms that were around the ships on Thursday. On Friday, they took those out to the Valdez. I don't know if those have been returned or not.
I don't know either. I'm really on thin ice when I start trying to be responsive to questions about the Valdez terminal. I only visited there about twice, so that's risky for me to try to speak for them. And I'm sorry we don't have one of them here.
How many men are on board of the Valdez right now from the original crew? How many are still working on the ship?
The only people on the Valdez, as I understand it, are salvage experts and the people operating the pumps, and they are all very close to survival gear so that they can get off there. So there's not anyone on the Valdez that isn't absolutely necessary to do
this
job.
What happened with the crew?
I don't have any idea.
You don't know where, I mean,
no, I
did
know
they went home?
I don't know if they flew them back to New England where they're from, but they're on Baton Rouge. They could be in a hotel in Baton Rouge, or they could be ashore. I don't know. I think we better stop. I bet you're going to catch a plane. And tomorrow, I'll talk to someone here from Alyeska and answer those questions. I'm sorry that I like to be responsible. I'm sorry that I can't answer all of them.
This is Dave Hammack. You've been listening to a press briefing, the evening press briefing by Exxon Company here in the Valdez Civic Center Ballroom. We didn't have quite the crowd we normally have in terms of press and dignitaries. I understand that a batch of people are out at the Valdez Airport. About 45 minutes ago, a Coast Guard Gulfstream jet assumed or presumed to be the one carrying the U.S. Department of Transportation Secretary, the Admiral of the Coast Guard, and Frank Murkowski, Alaska's junior senator, and the head of the EPA. That should have arrived in Valdez about 40, 45 minutes ago. We just received, the plane did make an approach. We don't know for sure that was the plane, but there haven't been too many Coast Guard Gulfstreams that have come into Valdez today. The conference tonight, the briefing, was by Don Cornett, who is the head of Exxon Anchorage's office. We weren't really any new startling revelations. It was basically a repeat of some of the information that was available early in the day. Later tonight, we hope to be able to bring you in about an hour or so a live broadcast from the public meeting in Cordova. We're still working on getting that set up so that we can broadcast it. We had announced earlier today that there was going to be a NOAA, National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Association, press conference at 8 o'clock tonight. That was canceled. There is no NOAA conference at 8 p.m. We will be staying on top of whatever meetings, briefings, group meetings and such there are. We will try to broadcast them all. For those stations down the line, we will attempt to put all of these conferences on the Alaskan Bridge so that any station wishing to carry it may do so. At this point, the meeting at 7 o'clock in Cordova is the only event we know of that is scheduled also for today. We also have a preliminary schedule for tomorrow. The Coast Guard has sort of a standard schedule established, a schedule, I might add, which they are not following regularly. They were late a half an hour this morning and failed to show at all this afternoon, but they are scheduled for 9 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. briefings. Exxon schedules an 11 a.m. briefing and then one in the evening. Tomorrow we have a special press conference that has been announced by a coalition of environmental groups that are active and working on this situation. We understand the Prince William Sound Conservation Alliance, the Sierra Club, and Greenpeace will be, and the trustees for Alaska will be holding a conference at noon tomorrow. That's Wednesday. We will be broadcasting that following the 11 o'clock Exxon morning briefing. Again, we're going to try to bring you the briefing, the town meeting from Cordova. If there is a press conference later tonight, we anticipate the possibility of a conference from the Department of the, or Secretary of the Department of Transportation. If that occurs, we will broadcast that. If it is in a location that we can manage, stay tuned. We'll keep you posted. This is Dave Hammack. I want to thank KCHU volunteer Jeannie Passons, who's been assisting with this broadcast back at the station. Laura Lee has been engineering. I'm Dave Hammack. This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.